We acknowledge the Wadawurrung people, the traditional owners of the land the upcoming game is played on, and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
Welcome to the 2021 AFL Premiership season on AFL Nation.
Pulls it into the pocket. Cameron wants it. Cameron gets it.
To Silwood, standing start. Lash the ball toward the goal. Oh, that's a moment of inspiration from the skipper.
Bolton still ready. Ready to rise and take a magnificent mark.
50 from goal. Kept it alive. 48 from goal. Goes with the banana. It'll be the miracle.
He runs around and bombs it.
To AFL Nation.
At the end of a quite remarkable week of debate, the footy tonight returns to centre stage, and it returns with a vengeance down the highway as second versus third meet to begin round 14 of this AFL season. Geelong and the Western Bulldogs, two of the challengers. The Bulldogs, in fact, would go top tonight if they can win and topple Melbourne for that position, as everyone has completed their buys while the Cats are building their portfolio. It was strong through the Port Adelaide victory. They could add to that against the Dogs, knowing that they have the Lions next. So they're measuring themselves against the teams in the upper echelon. It is AFL Nation for Athena Home Loan. Save on your home loan at athena.com.au on a pretty wintry night here in Victoria. Jared Waitley with you. Anthony Hudson's with me. Hello, hello.
Evening, Jared. I'm surprised you've still got enough energy to talk after the week that you've had discussing the David McKay incident, amongst other things. But as you said, we get to the footy. My mind goes back to last year when the Bulldogs kicked 6-0 in the first quarter against the Cats, and it took Geelong the whole game to catch it back up and then win. And I think it showed that what the Bulldogs had does threaten Geelong. The Cats had experience and whatever else they had last year to work their way back and win the game. But I can't wait to see how this game is played out tonight. It's a shame the conditions aren't going to be a little bit better and that we don't have a bigger crowd. But, hey, it's clearly the match of the round and a great way to start the weekend.
We have been conditioned to be grateful for small mercies, and 7,000 at the ground is actually a really good result. I look forward to seeing who the 200 Bulldog supporters who are eligible and who are able to muscle their way in. Jared Healy, good evening.
Good evening to you, Jared, and team and listeners. First of 50 wins tonight. Most clubs average about 60 entries into the forward line. The Western Bulldogs in Geelong average 45. Their weakness is their defence in the one-on-one battle, so they try and defend by limiting the numbers. They're both exactly the same in defence, so whoever it is that cracks the 50 should win tonight. And I'll keep you monitored, Jared, right throughout the evening.
Beautiful.
This sounds like Derm's old theory about first to 100 in score wins.
So Jared's got his own Lewis Ledger going, just in a slightly different way. Jordan Lewis, good evening.
Well, they'll be doing – can you hear me there? Yeah, yes. They'll be doing well because Adelaide are the only side to score 100 points against Geelong. So they are a stingy defence. And I just think – the difference between the Geelong sides that I've seen over the last couple of years, I feel like they've added another gear offensively in the past 4 to 5 weeks. You know, they're really starting to click.
And is that gear name Jeremy Cameron?
They are just when they're on, they are just so good to watch. And the enjoyment, I suppose, of the players that aren't involved in the plays, and you can see them on the periphery and how much enjoyment they get, and then certainly how much enjoyment the fans get, is unbelievable. This side, I don't think since their premiership years have had this many gears.
It is interesting. They've got that many gears they can afford, and maybe they needed to drop Sean Higgins or rest Sean Higgins or manage him, whatever you like, but I mean, they're coming off a bye and an 8-day break. So, I mean, Clyde clearly, he's in not great form, and they've given him a chance to go back and gather his thoughts and have another crack. Maybe through the VFL when that gets going, maybe not. But
I don't think he played. They played today. They played a little
earlier.
They
didn't play
today
in the VFL.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
So they may just give him a spell, bring him back either straight back in or back through the reserves. But it's interesting because they're a darn good side. When you bring Cam Guthrie in and you move Higgins out, that's good quality.
And Knuckle, who I presume will be the sub tonight, is the other one that can't get in at the moment.
Yeah, he was just going, wasn't he? Wasn't he, Higgins? You could just see he was
playing a different role, but struggling.
Playing a different role, that half-forward role, and
struggling with the footy, which
that,
is...
That was his greatest strength,
If he was just getting 15 or 16 and using it well, then he stays still there.
He's actually... Champion data will tell you statistically he's the worst kick in the game right now, which is
You could probably watch the games.
that's the level at which he's dropped.
Yeah,
I mean, because he's regarded, well, in my view, as one of the great Rolls Royces I've seen over the last 10 years.
Yeah, so you're right. That's the luxury, I suppose, that they have. Mm. But they'll give him time to try and rediscover his form. Yep. But I mean, they're unbelievable when they're on. When they're finding their way through a game, they don't get burnt. So when the opposition has momentum, then they're not getting burnt on the other end, which just keeps them in the game. And they don't panic. They just wait. It might be the third quarter. It might be the fourth quarter that they actually just click and they go bang, bang, bang. And go, you better hope when that happens that you can arrest momentum straight away, because that's 4, 5, 6 goals before you know it.
Gary Rowan feels very pivotal to me, and a lot of it's obviously to do with Jeremy Cameron, because it means he gets a rung lower in terms of opponent potentially, and he's roaming everywhere probably further than he did before, and finally starting fulfilling the potential that everyone thought he had when he was a younger player. But if he can maintain his fitness as much as his form, he's always sort of had little injury setbacks along the way in the past, hasn't been able to get that real continuity. He could be really important to them.
Well, he's one of those players that continues to get better with age. He's been a frustrating player both with Sydney and I think initially with Geelong. This is no question his best year by a long, long way. But their forward line is so multi-talented. Even Asava Radagalia now, he takes the ruck in the centre, then he basically pushes forward and becomes that hit-up mongrel sort of physical presence at centre-half forward, and Blitzarves comes off the wing and goes into the ruck. And Cameron's essentially playing as a high half forward. I mean, he's just dragging his man up the ground and burning him on the way back, opens up space, adds a little bit of extra midfield run, if you like. And they've got Asava and Tommy Hawkins, who I think is underrated at the moment. Nobody talked about him in the All-Australian midfield mid-season teams, and yet, he'd be stiff if he missed out.
I think that's the beauty about Cameron being able to work up the ground. I think at GWS, because he was the focal point along with Finlayson inside the forward 50, so he probably felt the need to be anchored inside that forward 50 for the dump kick to be able to compete in the air. Now he knows that he's got other key position forwards in that 50. So he does enjoy getting up the ground and roaming around, and he's got the work rate to back it up.
Yeah, and I think the problem with if you compare the Giants to the Cats, there was so much similarity between Finlayson, Himmelberg and Cameron. None of them were Tom Hawkins. And so I'm not sure who the big brute was down there, and certainly Cameron doesn't play like that. I mean, he is more of a ground ball running player, leading player. He's not a stand in the pack like a Tom Hawkins can be.
And I think I read a stat today that Tom Hawkins has recorded 18 tackles inside the forward 50. Mm. That's number one at Geelong, which is quite extraordinary given the size and the other strengths that he possesses. But that's their greatest challenge tonight. The midfield battle, they need to win that to clearly give them territory, because when it goes inside their forward 50, the issue is the key defenders in Cordy. And Jarre's having a good year, but he'll play on the medium size. But that's probably their issue down back.
John from Tommy Ruff's, Jared has just rung to apologise. He didn't get the message, but we'll give him another chance next week to redeem himself with a little bit of Moroccan Barramundi.
I noticed there was a lot less of hangers-on around Tommy Ruff's around.
I'll be back next week.
The Bulldog side of things, so they're 10-2, top places on offer for them tonight. They've got the best percentage in the competition. Their 2 is where the eye is drawn to. We've been together for those. They've been Friday nights against Melbourne, where they didn't stack up, and against Richmond, where they had an excellent first half and then got mauled in the second half. So they come back to a Friday night. It's another contender. It's in the environment that is Geelong. How much of an exposition is this of the Bulldogs tonight?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, if I'm Geelong, I'm looking at that Melbourne game and testing them in the first quarter to see what they possess. I think coming out of that game, we said, wow, they don't seem to have another way to move the ball from their back half, because Melbourne did such a good job of clogging up the corridor. They really tempted the switch. So if I'm Geelong, I'm testing that theory really early on in the game. Test them to see if they want to switch the ball, clog up the corridor. If they want to play a down-the-line game, I think that suits Geelong, you know, with their defenders being able to read the ball, being really good in the air, shepherding for whoever is in the best position to mark it, and then see if they've got another mode. If they've got another mode, well, then within that game, you've got to understand that, hey, this we might have to defend a few ways tonight. But I'd be tempting to switch the ball in their back half just to see if you can get some opportunities like they did against Melbourne.
Would you be tagging Libba like the other teams have in the last 2 weeks if they're going to set O'Connor to someone?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, why not? I thought it was such a good move by Melbourne initially, because he was a dominant midfielder in the competition, not only for the Western Bulldogs side. So, yeah, make them come up against, you know, Geelong with O'Connor tagging and see how they go.
Steph Martin back in the side, Jordan, which I keep looking at Geelong's back line and I just wonder whether they're one tall short,
yep,
if I can put it in those terms. And Tim English continues, and I know it's not great weather for Tim English tonight, but he just continues to improve, and I just wonder whether or not he can be that person that they can kick the ball. You only got to take two or three marks, kick two goals.
And, well, they've been challenged by Dixon, and then early against St Kilda, yeah, as well, they were challenged by King. He just couldn't kick straight.
So even against the Gold Coast, the other King boy should have, you know, had a field day. But I think all the talls need to do is not to get outmarked, because one of the, I suppose, the question marks on the Geelong defence is when the ball comes to ground, how good are they? Well, they're certainly not as good as they are in the air. So how do you then get English and Norton and Bruce in that position where they can bring the ball to ground and give, you know, Waitman and Bontempelli and these other midfielders coming down to get that ground ball?
I guess it's difficult to say it's a concern, but I reckon 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, whenever it was, we were at the MCG and Geelong played Richmond and they had Tui behind the ball as the anchor. I thought to myself, he's playing as good a footy as I've seen. And yet last week, when he was man on man at Port Adelaide, he had one of his worst games. And you just wonder, I mean, he's been wing, he's been forward, he's been anchor. I just wonder whether they're still trying to find his best position. And it's now's the time to find out, I suppose. But he looked best when he was playing that anchor role. If they play six forwards, you're probably not going to play the anchor role unless you're going to play five forwards yourself.
Yeah, so I think we'll get a really early tell to whether any of the sides think the midfield battle is vitally important to give up that spare defender. I'm a little bit with you, Jared. I would like to see both sides keep their six forward because we spoke about both sides' defence being vulnerable. So give yourself a chance. Back your midfielders in from the opening bounce and see how that unfolds. Don't necessarily take someone to the stoppage to give you an assistance there, but also give up something that might make the other side vulnerable.
So that's the setup for the Cats and the Dogs. Stephen King and Nigel Lappin are going to join us in our pregame show for Beaumont Tiles Trade Club and for Hard Yakka for a new breed of legends. Let's broaden out to where we've been all week, really. It was a set of events after the tribunal last night found David McKay not guilty. That required Steve Hocking, the general manager of footy at the AFL, to front up today to give us a read on his thinking, on the league's direction, on what it intends to do in the here and the now and what it intends to do in the future with head knocks and the like. This was Steve Hocking this afternoon.
We never asserted that David McKay set out to hurt Hunter Clark, but we did consider that he acted carelessly and unreasonably in the circumstances. The tribunal did not agree with this and we accept the decision of the tribunal. The health and safety of players at all levels of the game remains paramount and the AFL will not hesitate to take action where the health and safety of players is impacted or at risk. The system worked, the rules have not changed. Players must take reasonable care at all times, including how they approach a contest and how they bump an opponent, and they need to continue to do so in the future. There is an ongoing process and review of the rules to protect the health and safety of all players in the game. The outcome of the tribunal will be considered in that review. If necessary, rules will be adjusted at the end of the season. We make no apologies for taking action to make the game safer for participants at all levels of the game.
That was Steve Hocking. Jared Healy, you've always been one of the game's most progressive thinkers with an eye toward where things need to be. What have you made of this week's events and where we find ourselves now?
Well, you have to fully support the ambition of Steve Hocking, but I must admit I have at no stage, I'll take that back. When I very first saw the incident, I thought he was as guilty as they come. Then I saw the hands, and the hands being some 300 millimetres away from the ball, further than Hunter Clark's. And I said, gee, he's actually has gone for the ball. So since then, I've been a strong advocate that this was an unjust report. I didn't buy into the educate 1,000 by killing one. So I thought that was quite unfair. And I just wondered myself whether or not Steve Hocking had seen the hands at the ball. I fully understand how fast he ran at the contest, but in listening to Steve, I think to myself, well, how are you going to adjudicate this? And I think that unless he's prepared to say what I think was a collision, redefine that as a bump, then I think he's going to struggle, because I have all week been reflecting on what the game is. And what our game simply is, it's a contest. It begins with a loose ball. The umpire throws it up. And then we have hard ball, get contests. We have loose ball, get contests. And I think we have gone really a long way down the track to minimise head bumping with hard ball gets. And I was a strong advocate, even 10 years before the front-on bump yep. was actually taken up by Mark Williams and Adrian Anderson and changed, one of the great changes. And then there's a sliding rule. They are hard ball get contests, and we have cleaned that up to a large degree. But I don't think you can limit loose ball get contests. I really don't, because I think that this is a faster, stronger, higher game, like the Olympics. You can't tell me that you can judge 30 metres away whether you're going to get there a split second before or not. The ball might bounce sideways. So I'm fully supportive of Steve Hocking in most things he does, and I know his ambition is an honourable one, but I've struggled this week with his attempt to turn that incident into an incident that is worthy of 3 to 4 weeks.
So, Jordan, you've been really strong through the week as well, but what about where we find ourselves entering this weekend, where essentially Steve Hocking has said he will do the same again and could try and test the tribunal and then work out how to frame rules at the end of the year?
Yeah. I totally agree with what you've said, Jared. I just think there's things in our game where we can't control, and there's things that we can, and the things that we've introduced have been great inclusions. A couple that Jared has just mentioned, but I think this specific instance, as soon as I saw it, I just thought there is no way that David McKay could get rubbed out for playing the ball. Everything that he did is everything that I've been taught over my junior career, but mainly at the elite level. It's exactly what he did. And I just think we might see some stuff tonight where players will second guess themselves because of the events that unfolded during the week. And that's not how we want our players to play. We want our players to play on instinct. We want our players to be tough. We don't want them to have to think when they're approaching a contest, whether it be 20, 30, 40 metres away, about how that contest will unfold before they get there. Now,
I mean, you instinctively do that anyway, don't you?
I think you do. It's exactly what. So I think our players are well tuned already to be making decisions, and we'll see some tonight, and we may even point some out that they could have gone lower, they could have gone harder, but they still made a contest without actually injuring the other player in that instance. Now, if I refer back to that same collision, you would say Hunter Clark didn't approach that contest the way that we've been taught.
And yet we were about to suspend a person.
That did
because of an inability of Hunter Clark to be aware of his surrounds as he entered a contest. And this is the great challenge, I think, for Steve Hocking. This is a loose ball get where invariably two people are going to be challenging for the ball. And how you control what happens at the absolute epicenter of that is going to be very difficult. I think the other challenge for the game, Jared, is how we deal with this notion of making it a safe place. I think we've made it an incredibly safe place. But I think there is also a responsibility on those who are trying to make it a safer place to not do so at the detriment to what is the core of this game. And I think there is also a need for everybody who plays the sport to understand that is, it's a dangerous sport. That's the beauty of it. People jump on their on people's shoulders. They come down and land on their head. That's dangerous. It's exciting. And for us in the grandstand, it's incredible. We laud their athleticism, but it's bloody dangerous. And how we haven't had more trauma is quite incredible. And so you can legislate all you like, but people are going to suffer trauma, and some of it will be head trauma. And I think there's very few people I know that eulogise, that laud blokes elbowing blokes in the head anymore. So I think the general public want a safe game, and they want a clean game. But I don't think they want to take away the capacity for two people to fight for that one ball.
So the game's work on mitigating risk isn't done. So you aren't actually seeking to eliminate risk for the very reason that there is a paradox in here. There's an inherent danger in contact sport, and that is at the heart of it. But the next 10 years is going to demand every governing body across the world mitigate their risk to a substantial degree. So I would say the players are very slow with the dangerous tackle in what we're seeing in recent weeks.
They are,
extremely slow.
Yep.
So they've been told what you can't do, and more and more and more we're seeing players being taken to ground in a dangerous... There's an absolute lag there in the mitigation of what's happening. So that hasn't been mastered.
But I think a lot of that is because the tribunal haven't been savage enough.
Yeah.
And this is why I found it frustrating. I mean, there's a slam tackle there, and we should have been suspending that with 2 or 3 weeks.
Years
ago.
Yeah.
And yet all of a sudden we've got two blokes running for the ball, and it looked horrible at first sight. But then when it was pretty clear that David McKay was going for the ball, you know, making up all this stuff about care and, you know, responsibility, when two guys are just going for the ball, I think is the wrong case to be arguing your case. And yet I would start going, okay, let's start challenging actions, not outcomes.
That's what I was going to say.
So if we want to get fair dinkum, the bloke who flips a bloke an elbow in the back of the head.
We've been pathetic with elbows this year.
And pathetically inconsistent with slam tackles. $1,000 to a guy on $300,000 or $400,000 is nothing. But missing 2 weeks is. It would eradicate it in 2 minutes.
So he chose the wrong hill to die on here.
Oh, absolutely he did. And, you know, as I said, I'm a supporter of Steve Hawkins. I think he's done a wonderful job. But we should not be changing rules that change the very core of this game, and that is a pursuit of the football, a contest over a loose ball. Now, if as I said, if I hadn't seen those hands reach out just moments before impact, I would have said 4 weeks, like Steve did. But it was a contest for the ball. And so I struggle to see how he is going to come up with a rule unless he turns it into a bump. And just on that, I was with Adrian Anderson, the former head of football, a couple of years ago. I was having dinner last night. I was listening to your show on the way there, and it kept going on and on. And in the end, dinner at Tommy Ross. it turned
That's
up.
That's why I said, we didn't get it tonight.
Why are they deliberating so long, Adrian? You wrote these rules. Why are they deliberating? He said, well, that's because they now have to write a reason for coming to their decision. And I thought, okay, well, that's probably going to be a 2 or 3 page reason. And Richard Loveridge is a wordsmith. He'll be having flowery language. And he finally turned at me and he laughed. And I said, what are you laughing at? He said, they've just declared their reasons. And I said, oh, okay, well, read it out to me. It was reasonable.
Yeah. That's right.
It was 4 words.
When I heard you report that last night, or Tommy Morris report that, surely that can't be all.
That was it. And ultimately, it was a simplistic
case.
That's
all it needed.
I don't think the Adelaide defence attorney needed to get in the biomechanist. In fact, I marked him down on that. I don't think he needed to bring in the neurophysiotherapist. He just needed to walk in and say, this was reasonable in the circumstances for these reasons. The man's arms were there, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, it was good entertainment.
It was. And they clearly gave it a lot of consideration. At the very least, there was 45 minutes of back and forth around the timeline that they had. So, yeah, it was interesting. Even the defence advocate said when he watched it live, he thought, oh, well, one of my blokes is getting weeks there. Yeah. And he was able to wind that back. We'll come back through this. We'll talk the latest development on the Collingwood power struggle as well. Jeff Brown, having been outflanked for a couple of weeks, has put out a statement to try to relaunch his campaign, as it were. This is all for Autobarn. Top gear, low prices, racing to Autobarn by June 30. Imagine what you could do with $3,000 of bonus genuine accessories on a Hyundai Palisade. The Palisade is Hyundai's largest SUV and is Kidult approved. Test drive the Palisade today. Offer excludes Highlander model. Stephen King, Nigel Lappin, and the eight teams who having the bye will get Jared Healy and Jordan Lewis to run the rule over what they've done so far in season 2021 and what their prospects are after the breather. This is the AFL Nation pre-game show for the Beaumont Tiles Trade Club and for Hard Yakka ahead of Geelong and the Western Bulldogs.
You're listening to AFL Nation for the Beaumont Tiles Trade Club and for Hard Yakka for a new breed of legends.
This is the AFL Nation pregame show for Athena Home Loans. Kick your home loan goals at athena.com.au. It's 2 versus 3 tonight. The Dogs have made the trip down the highway to face the Cats in front of 7,000 on a wintry Friday night. Stephen King, from the senior assistant coach from the Western Bulldogs, is with us. Kingy, welcome to AFL Nation.
Hey, Jared. How are you, mate?
I'm good. What sort of night is it down the highway?
Yeah, it's really nice, actually. Obviously, a bit of rain earlier today when the VFL sort of started. It's been clear and just probably a bit of dew getting around now, but nice and still. So, good night for footy.
Got the sense of a big game about it?
It has, yeah. Obviously, a bit of a different build-up in terms of crowd and capacity. But, yeah, certainly it's great to have even the curtain raiser on before it. And there's going to be a good little atmosphere here tonight.
What does playing at Geelong mean to you these days? Can you just still a bit of a strange feeling given how much footy you played down there?
Yeah, it is a bit. I was actually talking to a couple of old teammates driving down, and it's a bit, it's sort of, you know, it's almost like a lifetime ago now, but every time you do come down here, it's, you know, you do think of all the relationships you made and, you know, all the special people that you connected with when you played down here. So, yeah, it's still fond memories, but it feels like, you know, a lifetime ago now.
Which end are you kicking to first?
probably downhill, I think. If we get a chance, but there's no wind at all to mention. So I think it won't be too much of an advantage.
It's a pretty exciting base that you've built for the second half of the season. Coming into the season, you were regarded as a likely finals contender. I don't think anybody had you as a likely premiership contender, and yet that's where you find yourselves at the midway point.
Yeah, look, Jerry, we were obviously pretty disappointed with how we bowed out last year, and Bevo and the playing group made a really, you know, strong concerted effort to start the season really well. So, and that's the way it sort of played out. We've obviously lost some troops along the journey, but we've exposed a lot of younger players to the level, and the boys have, you know, although we haven't been playing brilliant footy the whole year, I think we've managed to hang in games for longer and you know, had to fight and scrap and win those sort of tough contests that we've had to. And we've set ourselves up now. We're in a position to, you know, finish the year strongly, but a couple of challenging weeks coming up, and hopefully we get a few more troops back in the next month or so.
Just on that point about you starting the season strongly, I remember you played Melbourne a couple of weeks out, and clearly there was different agendas at that stage. Is there any downside to starting the season being hitting the ground running, you know, a couple of weeks out as you clearly did? And I understand why, because you had been poor starters in the past, but does it make the marathon a bit longer?
Oh, look, potentially, but I think you had a week off after that game, and I think it was just to really prove a point that, you know, we didn't want half our playing group just to go out there and get the minutes under their belt. We wanted to probably even just expose some of our younger players, just be ready for that intensity straight away. And as I said, I think just with the history of our group, knowing if we get to that start, we didn't want to leave ourselves with a run of having to win 8 of our last 11 games to get in, or we just wanted to try and build a really solid foundation for us to start the season off. So, from that point of view, I think, you know, the risk was certainly worth the reward.
Kingy, there's not too many times throughout the season where you can sit down and just assess what has gone before you. Halftime provides one of those opportunities. What as a coaching staff and as a coaching group did you sit down and assess probably the first half of the season, but certainly going into the back end, the things that you'd like to focus on?
Oh, look, I think for us, it's just continuing just to explore. I don't think we've hit our peak yet. I think there's elements in all phases of the game that we can continue to improve on. So for us, I think always, you know, it depends on the opposition you're coming up against, the style you want to play and what teams take away from you. So for us, I think we've had fluctuations throughout games and even periods of, you know, without them, throughout different periods of blocks of games where our ball use hasn't quite been the way it wanted. And I think teams have started to bring some heat to us. So we've had to adjust on the run. And, you know, that's a constant, I guess, challenge as a coaching group and playing group is just to keep growing and evolving as a team. And that's, I think that's where we find ourselves at the moment, where we're still trying to probably form what our best mix is. I think, you know, with Treloar and Dunkley going out of the team, our midfield, we've had to try and expose a couple other players through there. And that's been really exciting as well. And I think the exciting thing is what we'll look like when we get a few back, you know, in the next coming month or so.
One of the potential people to get back is Mitch Wallace. He still hasn't made the side, but it does look like him or McLean could be the emergency sub. Can you give that declaration as at this time?
Yeah, potentially one of them could be, Jared. That's right. So they're getting close. Look, it's been really difficult even the last month with the inability of them to play at the lower level. So we've, as a coaching group, had to put a real price on training form, and both those boys have been just, you know, dominant in the sessions that we put together for the guys that have been missing out on playing. So we're really confident in those two. You know, if either of them come in, strong bodies in these conditions, they'll certainly be able to hold up that part of the bargain.
So you've had a couple of cracks at dealing with Libba being tagged. One, you just made him suck it up and work through it. The next time you pushed him over to somebody else. O'Connor is likely to go to him. Is the move immediately to go on to somebody like a Cam Guthrie, or is he fighting for his own tucker?
Oh, no, I think as a mids group, we've got to help support one another and work together. So, look, I think that'll be the case, that you'll definitely go to someone. And I think we probably in the past just probably caught Libra off surprise, off guard a little bit, yep, in terms of probably not going to Bonte. And it's just a nice little reminder to him to not try and fight his own battles, to actually have the pride to you know, ask for some help, and for our teammates to actually be aware of what's going on in game as well. So, yeah, we've sort of spoken about it a fair bit this week, preparing for it, and just wait and see what comes.
How has the week been, obviously not getting the bye or getting the chance to get away? Have you done anything in particular to try and freshen the players up? And there's always a risk when if you give them time off and you give them too much time to make sure that they're ready for this game. They look all right coming towards tonight game.
Yeah, we train twice. So we train on a Wednesday and a Friday, and the rest of the week was the boys' time. So I think we've got the balance right. It would have been difficult probably for them to all train by themselves anyway. And we've got an actually extended break, you know, leading into the West Coast game on a Sunday. I think just the only murky part of the situation is not knowing what the next couple of days look like, and actually the week leading into the West Coast game. So we're just sort of waiting to hear confirmation on that. But, you know, apart from that, we'll try and give the boys a fair bit of time, even between, you know, tonight's game and next week.
Is everyone a bit nervy about the idea of hotel quarantine for a longer period than you might like?
Oh, well, we went through it, you know, prior to the Freo game being up in Sydney. It all just depends, I guess, on the extremes of it. I mean, and where you have to go, because you don't want to be locked up in a hotel for a week, that's for sure. But certainly when we were in Sydney, it was a little bit more relaxed. And I think now in the landscape and environment we're in, I think you're just prepared for anything. So that's probably the difficult thing, is just not knowing, but you can't control that. So hopefully the boys just narrow their focus on tonight and can just start really well.
Have you seen any of this curtain raiser that we can hear in the background? Is Josh Shecky's kicked five, has he?
Yeah, I think he just kicked another one. So he's launched some bombs from outside 50. He's going well, and the boys got off to a really slow start, but they're out now to nearly, I think, a 29-point lead. So, yeah, going well. Ed Richards is back, which is really nice to see, off half-back. So, yeah, the boys are putting in a good showing.
Has Easton Wood played in that game?
Yep, Woody's playing. Yep. So, he's out there now. He's played a full four-quarter game now, which is great for him as well to tick that off.
Jeez, you've got some selection pressure ahead.
Yeah, it's been good, Jared. That's been one of the strengths at the moment. And that automatically, I guess, puts guys in the senior team on edge. And I guess any, you know, great footy team has got that really healthy, you know, headache. So that's one. Hopefully you can, you know, it only builds a bit more in the next coming weeks as well. So, yeah, it's encouraging.
Give me the best ruckman in the competition outside Nat Nui and Max Gawn.
That's a good question. Those two, obviously, dominant. Yeah, I think, geez, even Tom Hickey, what he's done this year, I've been really impressed with. You know, I've just been amazed at just his ability to, you know, go to another club and, you know, at his age, just deliver what he is. I think he's been fantastic and he's really lifted Sydney's midfield.
King, good to have a chat tonight. So the best of luck.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Stephen King, senior assistant coach of the Western Bulldogs, having a look at Footscray playing in the VFL at the moment.
So Jordan Clark's had 25 touches and kicked 3 goals for the Cats. Pat Lipinski's had 28 and kicked 3 goals. Jamara Ugal-Hagan's also kicked a couple of goals. And as you said, Shacky's kicked 5.
It's a really deep squad, the Dogs now, isn't it? When you think about all those blokes that aren't there, you throw in McLean and Wallace. Mm. They've got a hell of a lot of talent in the back half. The question is going to be, will they all be there next year?
Mm. Well, Geelong are in a similar situation, aren't they?
Clark's obviously on the table, not from Geelong, but he's on everyone else's table. Yes. He looks a hell of a player.
Yeah, well, it's been interesting, put it that way, hasn't it? If he kicks 3, that could change things if he becomes a goal kicker. They might actually pick him.
Which part in the forward line do you think he might be in?
Mm.
He can push danger out?
Probably not.
Jared Healy and Jordan Lewis are our experts tonight for car sales. Unique insights and exclusive perks with car sales for owners. 8 teams having the buy through this round. We're going to run the rule over what they've laid down thus far in 2021 and what their prospects are after the breather. So that is coming up. Let's now head to the newsroom for a sports news update.
A sports news update for Rolled. Family-made Vietnamese served fast and fresh.
G'day, it's Sam Fantasia with the latest in sport. Port Adelaide won't cop any fines from the AFL after 4 of their players were pictured without masks at a COVID-safe Swimming Australia event. It's since been determined they had just returned from eating and drinking before heading back to their seats and their masks were on their laps. Carlton coach David Teague says they won't be gifting playing time in order for Mark Murphy to reach the 300 games milestone. The 33-year-old has played 295 games but is currently on the outer. Teague says he's hopeful the former skipper can rediscover strong form in the VFL. And in the NBA, where the Eastern Conference semi-finals series between the Nets and the Bucks is heading to Game 7, it follows Milwaukee getting up 104-89 earlier today. Chris Middleton top scoring for the victors with 38 points to go with 10 rebounds and 5 assists. That sport all thanks to Rolled. Family made Vietnamese served fast and fresh.
You're listening to AFL Nation for the Beaumont Tiles Trade Club and for Hard Yakka for a new breed of legends.
AFL Nation tonight for Athena Home Loans. Check out super low home loan rates at athena.com.au. It's Friday night footy, Geelong and the Western Bulldogs before us. Nigel Lappin from the Cats is going to join us shortly. We have, through these bye rounds, assessed those who are taking the breather, and there are 8 this week, so there's some work to be done for Jared Healy and Jordan Lewis here. You can get involved right across the weekend on AFL Nation on the Southern Phone open line. Get connected with Southern Phone, amazing new mobile SIM deals from Southern Phone. So we'll go in ladder order of the teams having the breather. Hutto will pop a contention before you and then you can pull them apart. Melbourne are 11-2. They entered the season with their coach under pressure and they pushed that aside pretty quickly. And from the opening rounds, have looked every inch the best team in it. Their 2 losses are curiosities, Adelaide and Collingwood. Adelaide, when they were probably stiffed on the last decision of the night, and then Collingwood, they got overwhelmed by the wave of emotion surrounding Nathan Buckley and looked like they could have used a breather. They've beaten Geelong, Richmond, Sydney and the Bulldogs, teams who sit inside the 8.
Well, I guess my 2 questions are the broad one about are you worried by anything you saw, but also Brown or Wiedemann?
Well, my answer to that second one is it may well prove to be neither, because I think that right now their forward defensive elements are off, and a lot of that's to do with Cozzy probably just running out of steam. He needs a break as much as anybody, but they may go with just Jackson down there and interchange Max Gawn into that forward line and rely on McDonald, who's unbelievably improved this year. What a fantastic season he has had. And have Bailey Fritch as the third tall, if you like. And I think that's a really good combination. I think that's when they played their very best footy. I don't think they've played better with Wiedemann, who I'm a big fan of, and I hope he gets there. But I don't think they're going to play any better with the other two, unless they haven't proven that. And your first contention was, Hutto?
Well, anything that you were worried about in the two losses that make you doubt them at all?
Nothing at all. I don't think there's anything you could pinpoint, Jordan, at Melbourne to say that both losses were probably because it's impossible to go through a really even season, be mentally at your peak, and sometimes you just get stiffed. If there was one issue that they need to address, I think, is the side times that they have been beaten or challenged, Lever has been held to account, and everybody is focusing on Lever, and they need just to have plan B with Lever if, in fact, plan A is not working.
Yeah, I think the first point in Brown and Wiedemann, I think they got to look at early on in the season whether it could work with Adam. I thought it worked perfectly fine. In fact, it looked like the forward line structured better. It felt like Fritch was in more contests, holding his own, and Tom McDonald is having a season like he did in 18. So I would tend to go at the moment with that type of forward line.
So without either of them?
Yeah. I think Jackson provides a big contest, but his ground level stuff is elite.
Mm.
So go back to that combination that worked so well in the early part of the season. Yeah, the two losses don't dampen my spirits on Melbourne. I think any side throughout the year will have losses. I think the losses that they've had, clearly one Adelaide, missed opportunity from a decision, but the Collingwood one was always a danger before the bye. They were coming up against a side who were emotionally charged. So that's not a worry for me. I think their game is in a really healthy spot.
The Sydney Swans are sixth. They're 8-5. We called them last Friday night, and it was one fight too many before the break. Such a bright start. Mm. They have been the overachievers through the first phase. But once those young players who had electrified either got tired or were absent, they just looked plain. So the Hawthorn loss is a bad one, and they have to recuperate because it's Port, West Coast and the Western Bulldogs, and that stretch may very well determine their fate.
Mm. Can they do any damage this year? And are they vulnerable to even making it now?
I think they're very vulnerable to hold their spot in the eight. I wouldn't be surprised if they dropped out. But to me, making the finals, I've had this discussion at length with Richard Collis on numerous occasions. Said, don't worry, Richard, it's not about this year. This is not, it's not make or break making the finals. As much as supporters want to make the finals, this is about, for me, seeing a level of improvement on their list that suggests that they can be in the big fight at some stage in the next few years. And they're nowhere near the big fight just yet. But, if they can recruit well and develop these kids, we haven't seen Braden Campbell for a fair period of time. In fact, Chad Warner's probably the only one who's sustained his form, and he now looks to me to be the best of that group of kids, even though he's a year older than a couple of them. But Logan McDonald looks like a real player, but, he might be 3 or 4 years away. But to me, what it says, Jordan, is that the Swans are now back in the hunt for the big prize, where they were going south at 100 miles an hour over the last 2 or 3 years, and they've got some holes to fill. Kennedy won't be there forever, Parker, etc. But if they can get it right in the next, say, 24 months, they could still be there.
That's the difficulty of the season, isn't it? Because you would imagine approaching this season, a lot of their thinking would have been about how do we manage these young kids through the year? How do we get some wins along the way without dampening all our spirits? All of a sudden, they find themselves in a really healthy position. So how do you then harness that without being not overachievers, but without demanding too much of these young players and still thinking about the development and making sure next year's better, that the year after is better? But this year for me is certainly finals wouldn't be out of the question. I think the games that they've lost and the games that I've done, I've loved their ball movement. For me, that's been the most impressive thing. But the games they've lost has all been about the contest, which has been the hallmark of the Sydney side.
West Coast have been as curious as any at the the complete collapse at Geelong. They were inching towards a loss at home, which they had against Essendon, but then they took the B set and got that back on the road against Carlton and then beat Richmond in Perth.
Yeah, it's been an amazing turnaround in game in game statistics, at least, if not game style, since the Geelong beat the mauling they got down there. They've won contested ball, and they don't normally win contested ball. They don't normally win ground ball as a subset of contested ball at all, and yet a lot of those things have changed. And I think West Coast is still in the premiership hunt. They're not unless Shuey comes back. Yo has been missing for a long time, but he's such a pivotal player for them. But, gee, the win against Carlton, it reinvigorated my enthusiasm, not because Elliot Yo came back, but a couple of kids who I hadn't seen play came back, and they played really good footy in an area where they're a little bit weak, which is their midfield.
And the question is, what type of, if any, injection do they get with Rioli coming back at the back end of the season? How much does he add to that side from a forward point of view, but also a midfield point of view? So, yeah, I was off them a month ago, but they've certainly come back into calculation.
Shuey's due to come back next game.
Yeah, but Edwards and Foley look like the future. It looks pretty healthy as well. I mean, Jared Brander, I'm not sure he'll hold his spot, but he doesn't look to me to be a natural midfielder. And that's where they've got him at the moment.
They're 8-5. Richmond is 7-6. They're 8th. And they have lost two. Well, they've lost. They're 1-6 against the teams above them. So they've lost to all of West Coast, Brisbane, Geelong, Melbourne, Port Adelaide and Sydney. And
which history says they'll then beat them all in the finals.
Their only win is against the Bulldogs, where at halftime that looked like a loss as well.
But they are carrying two flags. And that's a heavy weight mentally to carry in that. It must be difficult, Jordan, you've been there yourself, to be at your very best when you've climbed the mountain, you've stuck the flag at the top of the mountain a couple of times, and some of them three times. They may well be the best eighth side in the history of the game. Mm. So they are dangerous, and I think we take a lot out of a loss and a lot too much out of a win. If that had just snuck over the line against West Coast, we'd be sitting here saying, they're back. Well, they may be back. They just didn't quite get it right in the last 3 minutes.
Yeah, their greatest challenge is to qualify. And if they can do that, I've got no doubt that's where the motivation kicks in. That's where they feel they're most familiarised.
Can they win it from outside the top four?
Yeah, I think they can. Absolutely. They've had stars missing all season and still managed to get eighth halfway through the season.
Do they have to get to fifth or sixth? Could you do it from seventh or eighth and potentially on the road first up?
Yep. Yeah, depend who you play, though, wouldn't it? Like, you wouldn't want to play West Coast in Perth.
I think they could.
Yeah.
Collingwood did it last year.
True.
And then didn't give a yelp in a semi-final, so it's hard to go the distance. Imagine what you could do with $3,000 of bonus genuine accessories on a Hyundai Palisade. The Palisade is Hyundai's largest SUV and is Kidult approved. Test drive the Palisade today. Offer excludes Highlander model. We have before us Fremantle, Adelaide, St Kilda and Collingwood to work through the bye teams. How are they faring? What are their prospects? On the AFL Nation pre-game show for the Beaumont Tiles Trade Club and for Hard Yakka.
You're listening to AFL Nation for the Beaumont Tiles Trade Club and for Hard Yakka, for a new breed of legends.
Bit of adjustment to the form guides required for Friday night footy, Geelong and the Western Bulldogs. There are late changes in both sides, and they are interesting changes. Lockie Henderson is out of the Cat side and Steph Martin is out of the Dog side. So a key defender and a ruckman have been lost. Quinton Narkle comes in for the Cats and Toby McLean makes his return for the Dogs. And that leaves the subs as Sean Higgins, who is going to have a rest, and Mitch Wallace, who's as close as he's been for a long time.
Well, Mitch will be pleased, and he won't be thinking ill of any of his teammates, will he, Jordan? If somebody broke their toenail,
he'd be ready to go.
He'd be right to go. The interesting one, of course, is Lockie Henderson out. We spoke earlier about their susceptibility in defence, in the air or talls. Not that too many guys take a lot of marks, but up against English and Bruce, etc., they've got some work to do. How will they shape up?
Well, I think Blixarves just plays predominantly in defence. Henry will go to one of the tools. O'Connor will probably start in defence as well. We spoke about him maybe tagging Liberatore, but I think he'll start in defence. But there has to be some rejigging down there, and to look across the board, you just wonder whether they've got the aerial prowess to go with the Bulldogs. But you know, once again, on those types of plays, you rely on other players around you and maybe players further afield to help out.
Well, as we said, they both average conceding 45. They're going to have to bring that back to 40. It might be first to 48 wins.
And Toby McLean's quite a remarkable story. So it was round 17 last year against the Hawks that he did his knee. Mm. And he hasn't played a game at any level because the VFL's been shut down while they've been trying to give him a cider. So Stephen King told us that training form has had to count for more than it typically would. And training form's got him a run at it.
Well, he's done well to get back so quickly, hasn't he? It must be very difficult to come into the side with no games under your belt. Few players can do that successfully, so he'll be a much washed.
And especially a game that's changed in terms of the way that it's sort of quickened up, I suppose. Yep. So,
AFL Nation for Beaumont Tiles. Beaumont Tiles, win tiling products for a year. Icanwin.com.au. We're in the Cats camp here with Nigel Lappin, assistant coach. Nigel, welcome to AFL Nation.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Just tell us what's happened with Lachie Henderson.
Yeah, really disappointing, actually. He just got a knock sort of around his hip region last week. We thought he'd be right. But unfortunately, it's been had to be a late withdrawal. He just wasn't quite as good as we thought he'd be today. So we're obviously going to manage Higo. We bring him back in as a sub tonight. And Quentin Knuckles back in the team, which we're all really excited about.
So, Nigel, Jared here. Great to have a chat with you again. How do you structure up in defence without one of your key tools?
Yeah, it's difficult. We do have options, Jared, which is the pleasing thing for us. So I think we'll start with the guys that have been doing the job for us back there. Obviously, they've got a couple of guys that are playing really well in their front half. But Jack Henry's really come on for us this year, and he's been really looking forward to trying to take the best matchups to the opposition. He's always asking Scarlo to do that, and Scarlo's got a lot of faith in him. So I'm sure he'll get first crack at Norton. And then we've got options with the way we've been playing Mark Blitzarves. Obviously, he's spent a hell of a lot of time in defence and knows that position really well. Mm. If we need to break glass tonight, that's what'll happen.
No, I've watched a lot of the games this year and certainly over the past 5 to maybe even 10 years. I just don't think I've seen the Geelong's ability to have the scoring power that I think you possess this year with the inclusion of Jeremy Cameron. Do you feel like that's the case? And when you're on a roll, it is unbelievable to watch.
Absolutely. Well, things have changed a little bit for us this year as well, building with the way that we're playing. Like, we've always been a pretty good team in the contest, and our penetration through stoppage has been really, really good. But we've got an enormous amount of confidence in the players that are there. So we're taking a few more entries than we have over the past couple of years. And then just the inclusion of a couple of other players has really helped us as well. So your old teammate, Isaac, has just been amazing for us. His ability to run and create and break lines and create an outnumber for us in attack has meant that we've been able to create some more overlap run than we have in the past as well. And off the back of that, we're getting some really good looks with our entries. And as I said, we've got a lot of confidence in the guys that are there.
It feels like, and as you mentioned, Isaac Smith, that once the ball goes into the defence, that they are going to the open side at quite a decent clip. And that's been able to, I think Geelong last year would be quite measured out of their back up, but certainly given you another option to go a bit quicker and get to those dangerous forwards.
Absolutely. It's a really good point that you make. We've always had some good runners in our team, but now we've got some really elite runners. Like, even we played a couple of younger guys this year that are elite runners, like Jordan Clark, Max Holmes. We're starting to get some guys that can really complement the power that we've got in our midfield. And that was the idea of trying to get a guy like Isaac, because we know the way that he plays. He values every part of the game, but certainly when the ball turns over, no one runs harder in the game than what he does. It doesn't matter whether it's defence or attack, and he's been a great addition to us and certainly helped us break lines from defence. There's no doubt about that.
A lot of the commentary this week has clearly been about the McKay instance. Have players been talking about, would we expect them to adjust the way they approach a contest tonight, or is it just that the teaching hasn't changed and the way that you approach the contest is just the way that you've always done it?
I think it's going to be tonight, and probably the way that we've always done it. Like, we certainly, as a footy club, and I'm sure the players agree with my sentiments on this, is that we want to make the game a better spectacle, and part of that is making sure that the game's safe for everybody. So our job as coaches and players is to work out, okay, what is it the AFL want to do, and make sure that we coach that and teach that to our players. So if they need to make some rule adjustments, the players, the thing that's really easy to change is the behaviour with the players. Like they're full-time athletes, they're pretty smart guys, but the hard thing to change is, in my opinion, is attitudes and biases towards this, and that always takes a long time. So I think the AFL have rightly put it out there. We'll see what comes back, and as we always do, we'll support them with however we can.
It's been a really interesting week, and we were talking off-air about the prevalence of what we saw on the weekend, and it's so rare that it would be a shame to change too much given the rarity of the occasion, given that he did nothing illegal. But we move on, Nigel, to Zach Tui. What's his best position for you at the present time? Because we saw him touched up a bit last time in a man-on-man situation, and yet against Richmond playing the anchor role, he was one of the better games I've seen him play.
Yeah, he's really versatile, Zach. Obviously, I didn't realise how quick Connor Rosie was, actually, because Zach is lightning. So just a couple of situations where he got himself a little bit more proactive than he normally would. He would have addressed that this week with the defensive coach. He's a really versatile player for us. Last year had an amazing year for us on the wing, kicked a lot of goals, supported the way that we wanted to play. But given that we brought Isaac in, he allows us to have a little bit more bounce off the half-back line. His ball use, he's a beautiful kick of the football. He does a lot of the kicking duties when he's in the team as well. So I guess the answer to your question, of speeding around the bush a bit, is that he's really versatile. Yeah. I think for the remainder of the year, you'll see him play at halfback or on the wing.
Nigel, the first quarter last year in this game, they kicked 6-0. Was there anything in that that is still relevant tonight?
Absolutely. Even just watching the VFL, they give us a good touch up in the second half here in the VFL, just with their ability around the contest. They're a really tough inside contested team, but they flip the ball around. So if you don't quite get your method right with the way that you pressure or the way that you use the ball when you get your opportunities to win the ball, then they're a very, very good team and they're very hard to get the ball back off. And obviously with their firepower up forward, if they're the ones that are getting through the front of contest and we don't have a lot of pressure on them, their forwards can do a lot of damage. So we need to make sure that, as it always does, we're really good. We start well in the contest and we're really good in the contest. That's a hallmark of our game. And as I touched on earlier with your first question, we need to make sure that we win the territory battle against them and put them in under pressure in our front half. So stoppages and, in particular, centre bounces are going to be really important tonight.
And Nigel, more broadly, a bit made obviously of the age of the Geelong list. I think the 10 players over 30 last week. We saw Phil Mickelson win the PGA a couple of weeks ago. We're seeing in world sport older sportsmen last longer and play at that top level. Is that something that you guys recognised? How significant is that for the game, for the future of players that are getting a bit older, that clubs can have faith that they can last a bit longer?
Yeah, we certainly want to make that the case. Like, we've set up the program that way. We've got some wonderful older players. They still lead unbelievably well with our younger guys. Not as much with the amount of work they do, but you just got to be smart with that these days. Like, as long as they're there game day and for the majority of the training sessions, then you can maximise them. Our fitness staff do a great job with them. As I said before, we manage our program to look after them, and that was part of the thought behind what we were going to do with Higo tonight. It's a long season. We want those guys to be at their best. The other thing with our senior guys that probably doesn't get mentioned as much, and I've seen this, and Louis will say the same thing with the Hawthorn team, is that you can have those older guys as long as they're unbelievably competitive players, and that's what we've got. We've got a group of those older guys that drive our standards and lead the way game day, and we want to maximise that for as long as we can.
No, it's just one more question on the midfield and how you mentioned how that the territory in the contest is vitally important tonight. Are you one of the philosophy of to send numbers in early, or would you rather back your midfielders in tonight and try and keep six forwards head of the ball to give yourself a chance?
Well, we'd certainly love to keep six forwards. We generally prefer to do that if we can, but a little bit, it's always determined by what the opposition do, and the Doggies are really hard to read in this space. So some weeks they'll have a couple of forwards in, some weeks I'll have one, and that even changes within quarters, and then other weeks I'll have none depending on which team they play. So it'll be a little bit of a watch and see for us. If it was really wet conditions, we're one of those teams that probably are happy to play a number down and control the outside, but as you just touched on, the territory battle is going to be really important for us, and if we can get even numbers, we'd like that.
No, it's good luck for the night ahead. Thanks for your time.
Always a pleasure, guys. Have a good one.
Nigel Lappin, Geelong assistant coach. You can join the AFL, or the Ream AFL Tipping League at tipping.sen.com.au and win big weekly and grand prizes. So we'll keep picking through that and what the late outs mean for both sides, and we'll continue our walk through the other four teams who have the bye this weekend, including Collingwood, where it never rests.
College Asney have to play on Josh Bruce?
You're going to have to play on one of them.
Interesting.
This is the AFL Nation pre-game show for Beaumont Tiles Trade Club and for Hard Yakka for a new breed of legends.
You're listening to AFL Nation for the Beaumont Tiles Trade Club and for Hard Yakka for a new breed of legends.
14 of this AFL season on AFL Nation tonight, the pre-game show for Beaumont Tiles Trade Club and for Hard Yakka for a new breed of legends. We are moving through the team's having the bye, their prospects, what they've laid down so far. We're up to Fremantle, who are 6-7. Have they had a signature win? They probably haven't. They're sitting ninth. They've kept themselves viable as they reach their breather.
Do they need to do anything list-wise to challenge seriously in the next year or two, or have they pretty much got all the pieces, Jerry?
I don't think they've got the forward, another forward. I think that the ones they've got are, you know, they're okay. Their workmanlike may be a little bit better than that, but I think that they could do with another, you know, genuine talent. Like if you could pinch maybe just one of them over them from the West Coast and plonk them in there, they'd look a hell of a lot better. They need to keep Adam Chera, but the likelihood of that is remote. I think they need to have Nat Fyfe, you know, get his kick conversion rate up to 50%. I mean, it's just, you can't have such a good player missing so many shots. It ends up costing you games. And if you're going to play finals, you've got to win close games and you can't afford to be giving those away. And they need to get their injuries right because it's just been a killer for them, particularly with their key defenders. Mm. They've got a pretty good list, Geordie. I think they've got lots of young players, lots of key position players coming through. Griffin Logue, I didn't think was going to be where he's at the present time, and he looks like he could actually go again. Pierce looks like he's coming back. Hamling, I'm not sure about, but they don't really need Hamling at the present time because
they got Ryan as well.
And they've got Cox, who, you know, Cox has been forced to play one-on-one, which has exposed him, which is good for him. He's had a couple of really bad games. But I think he's one of the more outstanding young defending talents in the competition. But if they keep on building through the midfield, you know, they're going to get there. It's a question of can they kick enough score? Mm. And that's their problem still. I mean, people said they played a more attractive game under this coach than Ross Lyon. Well, under Ross, they actually kicked more score than they're kicking under the current coach. But they need to find their way to goal.
Did Ross give you that stat, Jared?
No, that was one from your mate Hoiney.
I think they're a key position tall forward lacking. Yeah, I think if they had all their key position backs fit and healthy, I wouldn't be surprised if they swung one of them forward. I don't know which one, but I think that would be an easy transition. If you can intercept Mark in the defence, I think to go down in the forward line and be a...
Well, that was Brennan Cox.
Yeah.
He went from being a forward into defence.
It's easier to go the other way, though, isn't it?
Not as a key position, I don't think.
Really?
No. I think as a half back, which I did, that's for me the easier position to go.
Yeah, so they need a forward though, don't they?
Well,
yeah.
Brennan Cox was going to be that, but he went, did the easy transition into defence. The Sean D'Arcy is the one that's coming, though.
He's improved,
He's, I think, if you had to see who's the third best ruckman, it's either Hickey or D'Arcy. D'Arcy's numbers over the last 6 weeks, I think, are right up there with Max Gorn. In fact, they may be better than Max, who's dropped off a fair bit, but he's a ripper.
I know you've got to go. Who needs Chera? Like, where do you think Chera will go or should go or could go?
Everybody needs a Chera in their outfit.
I agree.
Hawks?
He's a beautiful user of the footy.
I know you're a great follower of Yes, No with Richo. And I asked Richo whether he was going to Carlton. He said no. I asked him whether he was going to Essendon. No. Collingwood,
you think
no.
He's going to Richmond.
Richmond,
eh?
He went.
No, they're not allowed, they're not allowed to go to Richmond.
The Adelaide Crows are 5-8. They're 12th. They probably are responsible for the two biggest upsets of the year, Geelong in round one and then Melbourne when they were unbeaten.
Do they have the young players to actually get excited? I know they've got Thilthorpe. Do they have the young players to get excited about for the future, given that really Laird, Seedsman, Tex and a couple of their more experienced players have been a significant reason for them playing much better footy this year than last?
I think they do. I think there's there's going to be a gap when those players leave. So I think right now what they're experiencing is their best football for probably now and the next couple of years. I think when those senior players drop off, a lot of experience and a lot of key position players, it needs to be done in a way where they filter out of the side, not necessarily go whack. But I enjoy the way they play. I think they're really brave. They move the ball fantastically well through the arcs. Phil Thorpe and the key position forwards are developing nicely with Tex Walker still there. I think they'll be around the mark. I quite enjoy watching them.
St Kilda, who have been terrible, and they've lived the week in the headlines. They're 13th, they're 5-8. They have had awful results against the Bulldogs and Essendon and Richmond as sort of signature moments. The review is on, Bridge the Gap. They're reviewing the reviewers, evidently, as well. It feels combustible around the Saints right now.
Yes, Wayne Campbell wrote an interesting column in the Herald Sun, The Age, during the week, and he said you don't implement an independent review to sack the bootstutter. And you get the funny feeling it's going to apply down at St Kilda as well. Quite clearly for me, it's a pretty simple situation. A bit like Melbourne, when everybody went to the Spring Carnival after 2018, they didn't put in the work, spent too much time looking back on what they had done, even though it was their first finals, but it was a great year, but probably indulged themselves a bit too much. And now they've been exposed by A, their injuries, and B, a game style that's changed significantly. So they've got three issues they've got to work on. All of them are fixable. But they've got to keep their club together. And if they go into self-combustion mode, then the whole thing can fall apart and it'll be another generation before it comes back.
Yeah,
get in behind Rats.
Yep.
Get back to pre-season training. Ring Gill up. Ask him for a mulligan for the rest of the season. And that would really help. And then get stuck into the work.
Yeah, I think maybe they've been a little bit impatient trying to get mature players in to fix the problem straight away, and it gelled last year, but I think we're seeing now how hard it is to actually bring players in and implement them into the side and make it work. I think, you know, the Hanbury decision when it first came up left you scratching your head. The Bradley Hill one made sense, but he just hasn't been able to play well in that side, and the game plan for me is too obvious. So teams have worked them out. Once you beat them that way, they haven't got another mode to play in. So that would be a preseason working. But I think it's what Jared said, the attitude that they, I think, left last season with and arrived at preseason with was they were too happy with themselves.
Yes, well, so it's not to be recouped in the back end and it'll be holding it together. And then there's Collingwood, 16th, 4-9. Nathan Buckley has finished up. Robert Harvey takes the reins and his first phone call was, you won't have Darcy Moore for the rest of the season and you can live without Jordan De Goey for a week as well.
What does Robert Harvey prioritise, do you think? For the good of him and for the good of the club, more importantly.
I don't think he would think about for the good of him. I think he knows that he knows the reality of life. If he wins 6 out of 10 games or whatever they've got left, then it's going to enhance his opportunities. But he's been around long enough to have made his mark to the best of his ability. Whether he gets a senior job, I don't think rides on this particular thing. So it's about can he just tinker with something? And based on the last 2 weeks, I don't think he needs to tinker with too much. He could just apply a tiny little bit of himself somewhere along the line, but they've just beaten Melbourne. It's hard to tinker.
Does that make it harder for him?
Absolutely. That was the worst thing that could have happened to him because he doesn't get the immediate sweet spot. But, a tough time losing those two players.
Yeah, I think in all these situations where we've seen a coach leave during the season, what is quite evident the following weeks is they play with a bit of freedom. So that is what you would expect. So if you're going to go anywhere, it would be just to free their minds offensively.
And that's the work that's been done probably over 4 weeks and has led to 2 wins as they're well down that track already. Imagine what you could do with $3,000 of bonus genuine accessories on a Hyundai Palisade. The Palisade is Hyundai's largest SUV and is Kidult approved. Test drive the Palisade today. Offer excludes Highlander model. It's a bit of a sad scene down the highway, to be honest. There were 7,000 allowed in. I don't know whether every ticket's been taken, but it does look pretty sparse. There'll be some natural sound at least, so not play to a vacant stadium because it's worthy of so much more. As second and third are about to meet to begin the round on Friday night, the Cats and the Dogs. You're listening to AFL Nation.
You're listening to AFL Nation for the Beaumont Tiles Trade Club and for Hard Yakka, for a new breed of legends.